Okay, so the title of the message is Tender Mercies. Tender Mercies. So the first question is, what is mercy? What are we talking about whenever we say mercy? That's a pretty common biblical word as far as words that you've heard before. And so it might be helpful just to note that the same Greek word for mercy is translated as pity. It's translated as compassion. It's translated as loving kindness in the Scriptures. So being moved to pity, being moved to compassion, and being moved to loving kindness. One of my favorite just functional definitions of mercy is unnecessary kindness. Unnecessary kindness. Kindness to the point that you would deem it to be just unnecessary. There's no reason for it. There's no explanation for it. And then Horatius Bonar says that mercy is tender love to the miserable and guilty, showing itself in forgiving and blessing them. Tender love to the miserable and guilty that is manifested in forgiving and in blessing. I want to take our passage, and I want to think through it with you. And I want to do it in a similar way that we've done in a few messages in the past. I want to hang this passage on four different words and walk through it. So what I want to submit is that James 5, when you start with verse 7 and you make it all the way down to verse 11, James is illustrating a pattern. And he's illustrating a pattern that you and I are going to live out in our lives, and he's going to illustrate this pattern three different times in the text, and we'll see it. But let me give you the pattern. Number one, labor. Labor. Be patient, brethren, unto the coming of the Lord. Behold the husbandman, those who would work, those who would labor. Suffer. Endure and receive. Okay, that's the pattern. If you can remember those four words in that sequence, you can catch the pattern that James is referring. You don't have to memorize this since it's up on the screen, but why don't you guys stand up for me for just a second? And let's say those four words: labor, suffer, endure, receive. One more time. Labor, suffer, endure, receive. All right, sit down. All right, the first one is labor. Okay? Labor. A few just pretty general comments about these before we get to the text. Okay, God-given tasks and responsibilities are just a normal part of life. That's something that you ought to expect. In your life and in my life, we ought to expect that we are going to be called to labor. Now, you're already doing that in some ways, okay? So most of you are in school, and so you've been given a legitimate responsibility to labor in that area. Some of you, as you grow older, are going to move into different roles. You're going to labor as a husband. You're going to labor as a wife. You're going to labor as a parent. You're going to labor in a place of employment. There are going to be God-given responsibilities that you are given and that you will function in. And that's just normal. Genesis 2:15, the Lord God took the man, put him in the Garden of Eden to dress it and to keep it. This was before the fall. Adam was put to work. It was a God-given task that Adam was given. Okay, so keep that in mind. God-given tasks and responsibilities are a normal part of life. You were not created to function at an optimal level by being on vacation for your whole life. Okay, you're meant to function under the weight and realm of responsibilities and labors. That's just normal. Number two, suffer. Suffer. Suffering is a normal part of any ongoing God-given task or responsibility. Now, when I say suffer, I don't mean necessarily heavy persecution. When I say suffer, I don't mean that there's going to be a big tragic something that happens. But when I say suffer, I mean anything from the scale of what you would think on the most intense suffering, even down to things like, this is stressful. I'm tired. I'm having a difficult time. And then there's a whole lot in between. Again, this is normal. After the Adam and Eve sinned and they fell, God said to the woman he was going to greatly multiply her sorrow in childbearing, and then she was going to have a difficult time submitting to her husband. It said to the man that cursed is the ground for thy sake, and sorrow shalt thou eat of it all the days of thy life. So there's suffering that's being spoken about very early on there in the fall, and it's connected to their labors, their God-given responsibilities. Endure. Endurance is necessary for the completion of any God-given task or responsibility. Hebrews 10:36, for you have need of patience. The word patience there is our word for endurance. You have need of endurance that after you have done the will of God, you might receive the promise. The theme of this conference is the fruit of righteousness. And this message is on tender mercies. But the fruit that's under consideration in James chapter 5 is particularly the fruit of endurance. You will not be very fruitful if you do not have endurance. Okay? It is very easy to start something. Intimidating, maybe. Yeah, it can be intimidating. But the easiest part is to start. The most difficult part is to hang in there until it's finished or until you're finished. And if you're going to do that, you're going to need endurance. Now, again, I'm talking about your place of employment. I'm talking about parenting, right? It's easy to start. Well, maybe not so easy for the mom, but for the dad, it's easy to start, right? You have this cute little bundle of joy, and you're so excited, and then they learn to talk, and then they get their own personalities, and then you realize that what God is doing through your child is not showing you how great you are, but how much mercy and grace and wisdom you need that you don't already have, right? You need endurance if you're going to keep doing that. You need endurance not to throw your hands up. By the way, you're going to need that with marriage. Even if you meet your dream woman or your dream man, you will wake up for that dream fairly quickly, and you're going to need endurance. And then receive. Your ability to endure will only be as strong as the motivation and strength that you're receiving. Okay? So, we said, labor, suffer, endure, and receive. Now, let's think about how this may commonly play out in your life and in the lives of those that you may know. I guess a good question would be, where do you receive your strength? Where do you receive your motivation? Where do you receive what you need to continue to endure and carry on with life? Well, different people answer that in different ways. You realize if you are very aware of what's going on in the country as far as the opioid epidemic, the drug epidemic that we have going on, you realize that what that is that's a result of people looking in the wrong place, trying to receive what they need in order to continue to endure in life. You see, what some people think they need in order to continue to endure the sufferings of life is just some way to numb it all out and check out of life. Some people think that what I need in order to make it through the week is to get sopping drunk on the weekends and have a little fun and have a little time to breathe so that I can jump back in the old routine Monday through Friday. Some people think that what they need in order to be able to play the part on Sunday and Wednesday and to be able to appear to be that good Christian that everyone thinks they are, or maybe that they think everyone thinks that they are, if I'm going to have the energy to be able to endure and keep that mask on, I'm going to have to feed my flesh when people aren't looking. I'm going to have to be promiscuous in order to fill that energy tank up to endure the sickening routine of trying to pretend like I'm something that I'm not. You see, it's a labor, isn't it? It's a labor. Now, here's the problem with the drugs. Here's the problem with the alcohol. Here's the problem with the promiscuity. Here's the problem with, let me give you one that wouldn't apply, you know, to some of you. You know what? Sometimes, you know what pastors look to be able to find the strength and motivation to continue going? I preached a pretty good sermon this Sunday, and that's enough to keep me going for next Sunday. I'm spiritually dry. I haven't really been feasting on the Word very much. I put together this sermon as if it were off of an assembly line. But you know what? Somebody was attentive, and it made me think that was a good sermon. I got all I need for next week. That is, until I realized that the person who was attentive was actually looking at the fly on the wall behind me, and they weren't really listening to a word I was saying, right? There's nothing really there. Let's look at the pattern. Behold the husbandman. There's your labor. The husbandman waiteth. There's your suffering. For the precious fruit of the earth, and hath long patience. There's your endurance. Until he receive the early and latter rain. You see, the husbandman can labor, and the husbandman is willing to suffer through waiting, and the husbandman is willing to continue to endure because the husbandman, the laborer, knows what he's going to receive. That early rain and that latter rain are coming, and all I have to do is wait for those, and my labors will not have been in vain, and I can endure. Fruit will be produced here. James 5:10. Take my brethren, the prophets, who have spoken in the name of the Lord, for an example of suffering affliction and of patience. Now, we don't have the receive on here just yet, but look where he goes. Remember the prophets who've spoken in the name of the Lord? Those are the laborers. You remember throughout the Old Testament, they were called really to outside of God's will and God's providence and outside of the sovereignty of God, most of the prophets were sent on a fool's errand. You guys realize that? They were sent to preach a message that no one was really going to listen to. They were sent to preach a message that outside of something, outside of this dream for success, they were never going to be able to endure in. Because what they were going to do is they were going to be sent to a people and they were going to preach a word from God, and they were going to be labeled fools, and they were going to be labeled enemies, and they were going to be labeled all kinds of things. Take my brethren, the prophets, who've spoken in the name of the Lord, that was their labor, as an example of suffering affliction and of patience. Now, one of the other things I want to make sure we draw a line to is, it's pretty easy to see this with the prophets, but this is a God-given task, right? It doesn't say, take for example, Joe, who decided he would weed eat one day, and he picked the hottest day of the year, and he ended up getting overheated, and he fell out. Well, you can figure out how Joe didn't endure, couldn't you? He says, take for example, the men that God handpicked, and then take the job that God handpicked for them for an example of suffering affliction and of endurance. You know, I'm afraid that many times, and I don't want to paint a picture that's just too dark, but I also don't want to gloss over reality, I'm afraid that many times whenever we're trying to answer the question of what is it that the Lord is calling me to do, we have that in our minds as synonymous with what is God calling me to be successful at? What is God calling me to do that will turn out to putting me on the pedestal and people being able to say, why can't I use my God-given gifts like that guy? Well, that's not what happened with the prophets, is it? The prophets were given a gift, and that gift led to their suffering and the production of endurance if they were going to be faithful. And then we see here in James 5:11, right after, behold, we count them, those are the laborers, happy which endure. You've heard of the patience of Job. It'd be fair to call Job a sufferer, wouldn't it? And you've seen the end of the Lord. That is, you've seen the Lord's, not just the Lord's end goal, but you've seen where all this ended up with Job. You've seen the end of what Job received, that the Lord is very pitiful and of tender mercies. You know, that's the end of the Lord. That's the receiving end of every single one of God's children, if you're a believer. It's the mercies of the Lord. It's this reality. It's this, I think in 1 Thessalonians, he talks about this patience of hope, right? This endurance that's sustained by hope. Or they may have said it the other way around. It's this reality that God is a God of tender mercies. He's a God who's unnecessarily kind to His people. And He has called me to a task. In a fallen world, it is not abnormal for me to suffer. Suffering is not an indication that God is judging you. Did you know that? Suffering is an indication, maybe, that God is growing you. You know, Brother Andrew mentioned yesterday that sometimes those trials that we find ourselves under are actually good. They're not the indication that God is trying to judge us for something, but God is growing us for something. Okay, let's make sure we're on the same page. And this is kind of where we'll take our turn, maybe. So, with Job, it says that we know the end of the Lord, that He was full of tender mercies. So here's a good question we ought to ask. What did Job receive that we can expect to receive as an expression of God's tender mercies? So if God's tender mercies are going to help us to endure, if we move out of fuzzy land of whatever tender mercies means down to specifics of what can we be expecting, how do we answer that question? What did Job receive that we can expect to receive as an expression of God's tender mercies? Well, on here I have two options. First option is here, and I've got the question mark there just to throw it out there. You can see if you think it is or if it isn't. The Lord blessed Job in the latter end of his life more than the beginning. The Lord blessed Job in the latter end of his life more than he did the beginning. Now, I just want to go ahead and say that, yes, that is God's mercies toward Job. But I also, the question I'm asking is, can we read the book of Job? Can we see that at the end of Job's life, God blessed him more at the end than he did at the beginning? And can we walk away thinking and grasping and holding on to this reality that one of these days, in all my frustrations, and one of these days here on earth, in all of my suffering, what if I can just hold on long enough, the jackpot's coming. And by that, I don't mean heaven. I mean God's going to finally make everything work out. God's going to finally give me what I've been longing for all this time. See, we have to be careful here. We should be very careful not to allow Satan to deceive us into expecting that God's mercy is a way that he tries to make up with us or apologize for previous trials that we've experienced. You see, that's not the way it works. And we are very susceptible to that kind of lie. My wife and I took that mindset several years ago. So we Many of you know this story already, but whenever David was born, our son David, we had a difficult time with medical issues, and the birth experience, the newborn experience, all that was not a very pleasant one. Obviously, we love David, and he's a gift from God, and he's a pleasant, but everything that surrounded it was not. And so we found out that Abby was pregnant again with another little boy, and so we were very excited, and we both, without even thinking about it, thought, you know, this is where God's going to make up for all the heartache with David. And we didn't realize that we were even thinking that way until we were having a conversation, and it was, we'll get to have this pleasant birth experience, and in God's goodness and God's mercy, He's going to give us what we didn't have the first time. Lily was the first time, David was the second. So Abby was about halfway through the pregnancy. We had an appointment to go have a checkup, but it was supposed to be a quick in and out. One of our nieces was having a birthday, and so we loaded up Charlie and Nora and Abby Grace and Lily and David, and we were going to go see the ultrasound because it was going to be so exciting. The girls were going to love it. It was going to be fun. And so we got there, and we all went into this little tiny room, and the girls were excited to see our son, and she begins to look, and the baby was dead. What is that an indication of? Is it an indication that God was not merciful? If we adopt this idea that the way God's mercy works is that God's mercy is used to make up for previous trials, that God's mercy is used in a way that's almost apologetic for previous trials, we have a hard time knowing how to interpret an event like that. We have a hard time knowing what to do with something like that. Matter of fact, and we've already said that, but we end up with a Psalm 77, 6 through 9 type of despair. Has the Lord forgotten to be gracious? Are His mercies just clean gone? This is what I was expecting, and what I was expecting God to do is not what He's doing. What's going on? We have a second option. Job 42:5. Job says, before enduring the suffering, he had heard about God, but now, he says, I've seen you with my own eyes. You see, this is a different understanding of God's mercy. It's not an understanding that says God is busy trying to make up for hard times. It's an understanding that says God's using that suffering and God's using that endurance to reveal more of Himself to me. God is not trying to apologize for the trials and affliction. God is redeeming the trials and affliction, and He's using those to make me more and more like Jesus Christ, but He's using those, and this is really a synonymous thing, He's using those to reveal Himself to us and to reveal His mercies to us more and more and more. I could give you a lot of different ways that we saw God's mercies there in that little bitty hospital room when we found out that the baby was dead and we had five children and had to figure out what we were going to do with them before we could get to the hospital and do all that. But I'm not going to do that because I'll get bogged down and start crying and may not finish. So maybe I'll tell you later. We see here that God's mercy is allowing Job to see that his trials are being used to facilitate this John 17:3. You know what John 17:3 says? This is eternal life. What? That they would know you. Gnosko is the Greek word, an experiential knowledge. This is life, that they would know you. And so often we think, you know, I would really love to know God more. I would really love. And there are ways. Brother Zach preached on drawing closer to God, and God will draw closer to you. But I don't want to discount that. But brothers and sisters, the thing really that God uses so much of the time to drive us closer to Him when we just in ways that we just can't resist are trials. They're trials. And here's why. You know, it's some of you are too young to figure this out yet, and some of you are well aware of this. But isn't it funny that so often God calls you to things that you're just not very good at? Isn't that funny? For instance, in the passage that we have right now, James 5, if you look from 7 to 11, he just got finished saying to these rich guys who were oppressing and who were abusing the brethren, you're going to be judged. And then the key word in verses 7 through 11 is patience. Be patient. Be patient with these guys who are treating you unfairly. Be patient with these guys who are abusing you. Be patient. Be patient. Anybody good at patience here? Anybody? Anybody feel like that's your gift? No? Yeah, that's because it's hard. It's because it's hard. Husbands, love your wives. Anybody feel like loving your wife is your gift if you're a husband? Anybody feel like you're particularly gifted in that area? You have these special insights that most people don't have? Probably not. And if you do think that, you're probably not very, you probably don't have a very accurate view of yourself. Wives, submit to your husbands, right? Anybody gifted in submission? Oh, I just submit all day long. Me? Nah, I don't care what I think. It's just what he thinks. Anybody good at that? You see, God calls us to these areas not to prop us up if we really have a real view of who we are and what we're made out of, not to prop us up in ourselves and say, oh my goodness, I can't believe, I never dreamed I would be such a good husband. I never dreamed I would be such an obedient child. It's just so easy to obey my parents. More rules, please. More rules. It's to show us how much we need His mercy. It's to show us that if I'm going to have endurance to complete the task that God has given me, I need Him. And it's to show us that He's not waiting on us to come to that realization to give us what we need. You see, when we talk about tender mercies, they're not worth a whole lot if the backdrop is everything's going my way. But tender mercies come in front of a backdrop of heartbreak, in front of a backdrop of suffering, in front of a backdrop of things weren't supposed to be this way, in front of a backdrop of I don't think I can keep going. And you find that a God of mercy comes and gives you the strength you need for the day that you need it. You find that there are tender mercies that you're receiving. And what I said earlier, I mean that. Most of the time as these tender mercies come, you may not recognize them in the moment, but you will be able to clearly see them as you look back and see how God has carried you and provided for you through these things. It's God's mercy that allows us to be able to have this 2 Corinthians 4, 16-18 type attitude. Though my outward man is perishing, the inward man is being renewed day by day. Right? You know, I'm afraid sometimes, and Brother Thomas mentioned this a little bit, I'm afraid sometimes we have these romanticized views of what trials are going to be about, or at least this romanticized view of how a biblical understanding helps us in trials. So I'm afraid that so often we hear things that are true, like what Brother Andrew said yesterday when he said, so many of these trials are good, and in our mind we think, well, that's good information to know. The next time I'm in the middle of a trial, I'm going to remind myself that it's good and I'm going to be okay. It doesn't work that way. Romans 8:28 is a good verse to know. It's a true truth, but it will not keep you from experiencing pain. It will not keep you from being stripped of every ounce of strength that you thought you had when you're under the weight of a trial that is meant to lead you to the foot of a Father who's full of tender mercies. You're going to hurt in life. And your theology of trials will not take that hurt away. You're going to be disappointed in life. You're going to want to give up in life. And the God of Romans 8:28 is going to help you and carry you through that. But you're not going to be able to say, all things are working for good. This thing's working for good. Therefore, I'm unaffected. Let's keep going. That's not it. Trials are going to come. Suffering, just everyday kind of suffering, is going to come. You're going to invest yourself. And it comes in different ways. Met with a woman recently who was married to a man. He was a pastor for 20 years. She loved being a pastor's wife. They had a good marriage. Then all of a sudden, things started getting kind of strange. She started acting funny. The progression over the last 8 years is that now he's left the ministry, left his family, lives with his mom, goes to church with his mom on Sunday because that's a requirement if he's going to live with her because he can't hold a job. And she wants to know, how do I go through this? Well, you know, Romans 8:28 is a comfort, but it doesn't do away with all the hurt. Because it says, it doesn't say, cheer up because what you're going through right now is good. It says, keep going because God is working this for good. Right? Sometimes we lack endurance because we think this strange thing called pain is not supposed to be happening. And since it is happening, I'm going to pull the escape hatch. It's sad to see some young Christians, some young folks who have, and when I say young, I don't necessarily mean young in age, but sometimes new converts have this idea that Christianity is going to be so easy and I'm fired up and the Lord has done a work and I'm going to keep moving and I'm going to keep pursuing Him and growing. And if you've been a Christian very long and you've endured very long, you realize there's some suffering that comes along with being a Christian. It's not always easy to be a Christian. And by that, I don't mean it's not always easy to be a martyr. I mean it's not always easy to just have a disciplined time where you're spending time with the Lord in the mornings, is it? It's not always easy to be excited about serving in your local church, is it? And so often, people decide that since it's so difficult and it's not supposed to be difficult, it's time for me to pull the escape hatch. This suffering is more than I'm going to handle. This discomfort, the fact that I get kind of bored with what I'm called to do, is just more than I can handle. I'm going to pull the escape hatch. You know what God's solution is? Endure. Endure. Keep going. Keep going. And if it's real, you will. Here's a good quote by Paul David Tripp, that God will take us to places we never intended to go to produce in us what we could never produce in ourselves. God will take you to places that you never intended to go to produce in you what you could have never produced in yourself. And as He's doing that, you're laboring, you're suffering, you're enduring, and you're receiving those tender mercies. And so the question for us is, how will we endure? How will you endure? Look in Lamentations chapter 3. This is a familiar chapter to most of us. Lamentations chapter 3. Look what Jeremiah says. He says, this is verse 15. He has filled me with bitterness. He has made me drunken with wormwood. He hath also broken my teeth with gravel stones. He hath covered me with ashes. And thou hast removed my soul far off from peace. I forgot prosperity. And I said, my strength and my hope has perished from the Lord. Remembering my affliction and my misery, the wormwood and the gall, my soul hath them still in remembrance and is humbled in me. Sufferings of life are painful. This is a real man writing about real suffering and real pain that he experienced. And if you read the whole chapter, it's just, I mean, it doesn't get any, you know, we're down to the good part here in a minute, but it's not any brighter, it's not any better. But look what he says here, verse 21, "This I recall to mind, therefore have I hope. It is of the Lord's mercies that we're not consumed, because His compassions fail not. They're new every morning. Great is Thy faithfulness." And that's where that is. Jeremiah is in a place where anyone would be ready to throw in the towel, where anyone would be ready to hit the escape hatch. And Jeremiah says, I recall this to mind, God is full of mercy. Not just that, but His mercies are new every day. That's a sweet thought. You know what that means? That means that God knows you're going to be placed in some sort of circumstance tomorrow, which is a fallen world for, you know, if nothing else, to where you are going to need strength. It also means that you're in some sort of a state that God is compassionate. He is pitying. He is supplying what you need. And it's going to be there before you get there. What you need will be there before you get there. And you'll have the strength that you need as you need it. God's called the Father of Mercies. Look at a few things about God. I'm not going to turn to these, but in Exodus 25:21, we learn that God communes with His people from the mercy seat. Isn't that a sweet thought that God establishes back in the Old Testament? If I'm going to commune with you and you're going to commune with me, it's going to be from this particular seat. And this seat is called the mercy seat. It's the seat where you receive unnecessary kindness. I give you so much mercy that if you were thinking logically, you would say, "Whoa, whoa, whoa, God, that's too much. It's unnecessary for you to do all that." And God says, "Wait a second, you don't understand mercy. You don't understand. Every bit of this was unnecessary. None of it that you received was anything that we would call logically necessary. I'm compassionate, I'm loving, I'm tender toward my people." This is where you commune with God if you're a believer. Psalm 86:15 says this, that God is plenteous in mercy. As a matter of fact, Psalm 119:64 said that the earth is full of His mercy. You know what that means? It means that whenever we need help, whenever we find ourselves in suffering and we find ourselves needing the endurance that we need, we can't ask God so much that He runs out. You can't run God out of mercy. He's plenteous in mercy. He has more mercy than you could ever ask for. Now the last one is the great one here. The Lord takes pleasure in those that hope in His mercy. Did you get that? It makes God happy for you to ask Him for mercy. Now, if we find ourselves in the reality of what James is talking about, this pattern in James chapter 5, that we are called to labor, and in our labors we're going to suffer, and in that suffering we have to endure if we're going to make it to the finish line, and we know that we must receive some strength in order to do that, and that strength, we're saying, comes from God's mercy, and the Lord takes pleasure in those who are hoping in His mercy. What does that mean? That means there needs to be a constant access, right? There needs to be a constant going to that Hebrews 4 throne of mercy, asking for grace and for help in our time of need. You know, it would be one thing if it just said God is the the giver out of mercy, right? He just gives it out. He gives it out the way we give things out. You know, outside of Chick-fil-A, if you go to a fast food restaurant, most of the time, once your meal is ready, it's just kind of plopped up there, right? Sometimes I think we think about God that way. That we think, here I am coming again, asking God for mercy. He must be so tired of me. This is so petty. This is not that big a deal. You know, sometimes folks have the wrong idea. They think that things can get better if we can just learn to minimize our situation and our suffering. It's not really suffering. You ought to heard about what my granddad endured. That's not really that bad. Did you hear about my cousin? Things don't get better by minimizing suffering. Things get better by maximizing. What that really means is getting an accurate view of the mercies of God. Right? And so we come and we ask again and again and again and again. And it's not because our sufferings are so tiny. It's because God is so huge. And so God has mercy for your sin. There's some references you can look at. In Isaiah 55, 7, he talks about the rebellious returning to God and receiving mercy. I don't know, obviously I don't know any of your hearts tonight, but if it may be that some of you have never ever professed Christ. And it may be that as you've been listening to some of the messages that your hearts have stirred and you've become convicted over your sin. It may be that some of you have professed Christ years ago, but you know in your heart that that has been a very shallow profession, that you've held on to your sin, that you've just given up on a life of repentance, that you have not been walking with the Lord. It's all been a facade. Well, I've got good news for you. The God who delights in giving mercy has mercy for your sin. Are you sick of your sin? Do you see yourself in the midst of labors that are producing suffering and you need endurance? He has the mercy you need. He has the mercy you need. David says that he cries out for forgiveness according to the tender mercies of God in Psalm 51. Matthew 11, 28, which has already been mentioned, Jesus says, "Come to me. Come to me." And so whenever we're thinking about God's mercies, when we're thinking about the ability to continue to endure, there's enough mercy there for your sin. God's got mercy for your weakness. He's got mercy for your weakness. Sometimes it's not that you're caught up in some great sin. It's that you're beat down in despair because you just feel weak. O Lord, rebuke me not in thine anger, neither chasten me in thy hot displeasure. Have mercy on me, O Lord, for I am weak. O Lord, heal me, for my bones are vexed, my soul also sore vexed. But thou, O Lord, how long? Return, O Lord, deliver my soul. O save me for thy mercy's sake. You know God has mercy. He has a storehouse of mercy for those who are weak, for those who are just tired, for those who do not think that they can endure. And God's got mercies for every need, right? Hebrews 4, 14 through 16, speaking about our high priest, speaking about the boldness that we ought to have as we go and approach him boldly, and we ask him for the mercy and grace to help us in our time of need. 1 Peter 5, 7, we're called to cast or to hurl all our cares upon Him. Why? Because He cares for us and He has the mercies that we need. Psalm 23, 6, the psalmist says this, "Surely goodness and mercy will follow me all the days of my life." Again, brothers and sisters, I'm not talking to you this evening about theories, about what might happen, about something you may experience. Whether you're a believer or unbeliever, the first three points you are going to experience. You're going to be called to labor, and in that laboring you're going to have sufferings that manifest themselves in frustrations, that manifest themselves in the exposing of your weakness and all those kinds of things. You're going to be called to endure, and the question is going to be, how will you do it? What will you receive? And for the Christian, the answer to that is, we will receive the tender mercies of God, and we can go to that storehouse again and again and again and again. And so I encourage you, wherever you are tonight, look to Him, look to His mercies, and endure.